Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwaraha, Guru Sakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I think it comes down a little bit. Om Namah Shivaya. How wonderful that we're all together. This is the portrait that I expected when monks were getting ready to fly off from Hawaii. I had my team. We had started having daily meetings of all the things that were happening. And I said, you know, we've had 24 inner searches. This is the 25th. But this one is maybe the most important one of all in terms of nurturing our worldwide fellowship, in terms of strengthening the spiritual park, in terms of bringing together Gurudeva's shishyas from so many countries. And we never had that before. When usually we have an inner search, we fly off to some place where we're total strangers. Nobody knows us. And we know ourselves and we have a great time to ourselves. But this is so different and so wonderful to have all of you here, the Mauritian Shishyas here, to have the spiritual park. And didn't we have a grand morning? Such, you could just see, I was looking out at this sea of people, and their just eyes were big, and all their hopes were high, and they were seeing the guru, and the problems probably temporarily dropped away. They'll come back tomorrow. Swami gave his beautiful song and talk and cheered them all up and made them realize that you can make yourself happy. It's possible. If you have the tools and you have the will to do it, you can make yourself happy. And Gurudeva gave us, as you all know, all of the tools that we need. And in fact, that was one of his departing commands to us on Kauai on those days in November of 2001. And he said, I gave you all the tools, spent my whole life developing the tools, engineering the tools, gave you the tools. Now, it's up to you to use them. It's nothing to have a tool. If you have tools, you can have the best tools in the world hanging on the wall. And if you don't use them and you don't know how to use them, they're of no use to you. You can have the most profound teachings in the trilogy books, and if they just sit on the shelf and you don't apply them to your life, then they're useless, totally useless. What's useful is putting them into effect. And what's useful is doing our sadhana and following Gurudeva's beautiful teachings and following them when things are good and following them especially when things are not so good. And we really have to lift ourselves, lift our spirit a little bit more than we're used to. But we're so happy to be here, and want to just do a couple of things this afternoon together. At the first part is I want to tell you a story. It's a Gurudeva story. Some of you have heard the story, and forgive me or tell me if I get it right. This is a story that to me was important in my young monk's life because it deeply impressed me about how different a guru is than an ordinary human being. You know, you have gurus of various kinds. You have gurus who are extremely knowledgeable, and they're like academicians almost. They know seven languages and they know all of the scriptures and they can read the Bhagavad Gita forwards and backwards, and they're brilliant in that way, and they're gurus. And then you have gurus who are hermits. And they don't even want to talk to you. They don't mind if you come forward and offer them a lime or touch their feet, but they're not interested in engaging with you. They're engaged in their own inner life. That's like a Chelapa Swami. You know, he's a great guru, but don't try to go close to him. He'll throw a rock at you, chase you away. And then there's enlightened gurus like our Gurudeva, a special breed of guru, enormously full of Shiva, I would say. They sort of become Shiva by his sadhana and by his immersion in the inner light and immersion in the self within. He becomes Shiva and he becomes all of us in that process. As soon as you become Shiva, you become the whole thing, you become everything. So here's the story. It's an inner search story. So we're on an inner search. So this was another inner search that happened in 1970. How many years ago is that? 34? 44? 44. 44 years ago when I was just 2 years old. And we were, it was called Inner Search Tahiti Salon. That was the name of it. And so the Inner Search took about, I think 37 Inner Searchers went with Gurudeva to Tahiti for 9 days. And then after 9 days, we flew over to Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, and spent the rest of the time, about 2 weeks, in Sri Lanka. It's a wonderful journey, wonderful journey. And it was Gurudeva's second visit back to Sri Lanka after his 1940s time with Yogaswami. We had gone in 69, and he wanted to go right back. He was so thrilled with what he saw there. And so we went back, and my job was to do what Sentulnada Swami is now doing. And so I was a coordinator. So we went to Papeete in Tahiti. It's a little island. And I had arranged for us to stay in a really nice place. It was a Club Med resort. Anybody knows about Club Med resorts? They're sort of like a high-end resort that makes you feel like a native, in this case. Yeah. So what they had built were dozens of little cottages, I guess you could call them. They were almost round, and each cottage took 2 people in it. This is all part of the story. And they had a thatched roof, and they were right on the water, or some of them were in the water. You went across a little bridge to go to your room. And inside the room, you felt like you were a Polynesian princess or prince. And, it wasn't a bed. It was like a little hammock or a fancy cot, like a tribal person, a tribal king might have. And all of the decorations were like that, very tropical and Polynesian. And then they had a little kitchenette over on one side. And all of the walls, 360 degrees, were screened windows. So if you looked out this side, you could see the ocean. And you looked out that side, you could see the mountains. Very charming place. So Gurudeva had his cot about where you're sitting, Ganesh. I had my cot on this side of the room, a little bit further. And we went to sleep, and I started having a dream. To this day, I don't remember many dreams that are 44 years old, but this one I do. So in this dream, I'm driving down a big 16-lane freeway in Los Angeles with in a Cadillac, a white Cadillac convertible. Yeah. Fancy. And I'm in the passenger seat, and the driver is this big man. If he were a physical man, he would be like 7'5" or something like that. And he had a bald head just like you have. Oh, thank you. And a black outfit with a little like guru collar and a big gold pendant hanging on the black outfit, which was kind of 1970s style, I suppose. But what was impressive about this man in this dream was that he was so charismatic. He was so powerful. He was so well-spoken, articulate. He just seemed to own everything. He said, we were driving, he says, I own all of those skyscrapers over there, and I own that film studio over here, we're driving. And he's telling me all of this, and I'm looking up at him, and I'm thinking, my goodness, this is such an unusual man. I mean, he's just so, I never met anyone like this before. So then he stops the car, and we go up an elevator to the top of a big building. And up in this building, we're on the penthouse floor and all windows looking out over Los Angeles. And he was saying, and I also own that, and that's mine, and that's mine, and that's mine. And obviously, very rich and very proud, and you wanted me to know all of this. So I'm standing there, scanning all of his kingdom. And all of a sudden, something happened to me that never happened before and never happened since. Only one time in my life. So I'm lying there. Gurudev is lying there. And I opened my eyes, but I was still dreaming. This is really strange. I mean, usually we all have the experience that we dream and then we go through a little magic transitional land, and then we're in the outside mind and we're not dreaming, and the dream is there and we're here. But in this case, I was looking into this cottage room and I'm still dreaming. I'm thinking, this is so weird. And suddenly, across the room, it was kind of a almost not quite full moon, so that it was coming through the windows. The windows were all around this place. And I could see Gurudeva, and he opened his eyes. He's looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and I'm feeling very, very unusual. And then Gurudeva says, I want you to get out of that building. So I'm thinking, wait a minute, how does he know I'm in a building? I'm still dreaming, I'm standing in the building and I'm looking at him. He says, I want you to get out of that building right now. So my mind starts spinning. My intellect is trying to find traction. No one ever prepared me for this particular moment. No one ever told me anything like this was even possible. So my intellect is just going round and round. What is going on? What's happening? And finally I said, aha, I got it. So I'm dreaming. And in my dream, I dream I wake up. And I dream that Gurudeva knows what's in my dream. And anything can happen in a dream, right? No limits. So I thought, I was satisfied, put my head down, went back to sleep, back to my dream. So our morning pattern always is, when we were traveling with Gurudeva, I would try to get up early and make him a hot cup of coffee. He loved a hot cup of coffee first thing in the morning. So I'd gone to the little kitchen that was over there, and I made him a hot cup of coffee and put it on the table and waited for him to get up. And he got up and came over, and I said, "Gurudeva, I just have to tell you about this wild dream I had last night. I dreamt about you. You were in my dream." And he said, "Don't say another word." He said, "You know, you're a monk in my order now, and you have to be very careful who you associate with. That man that you were with in that dream last night, he's a very powerful, but not a very positive force, astral being. And people like that can influence you. People like that can change your mind. People like that have powers. So you stay away from him. Even in your dream, I don't want you to go near him." So now, I'm holding a cup of coffee. I can't use the excuse I used last night, because I know I'm awake. And now I'm really stuck, because it actually happened. He actually was inside my dream. Not only was he inside my dream, he was inside my dream protecting me. I mean, even a mother, when she goes to sleep, lets her child have her own dreams. You stop protecting them when they go to sleep. But here was Gurudeva, with all of his affection and all of his profoundness, following me into a dream where I shouldn't have been in his mind. That was his judgment. I shouldn't have been in that dream. I should have been in a higher plane dream. That's what he thought. That in your dreams, if you're living right, then even your dreams are elevated dreams. They're not instinctive, fearful, low-minded dreams. They're very high dreams. And so he came into that dream to protect me. And that just shows, so what does that show? So, I should say this. He never said another word about it to me. He never explained anything or asked me if I had any questions or anything like that. He just let it be. And so for the next 2 weeks, every free moment I had, I was trying to come to terms with this. It was such a new human experience for me. And and so I came to a few conclusions. One was that the guru's love is infinite. Two is that there's no privacy in the mind. Scary thought, I know. There's no privacy in the mind. We think our thoughts are private, right? And if anything's private, it's your dreams. No. There's just a one mind, as Gurudeva taught us. There's a one mind, and some extraordinary souls have access to parts of that mind that we, in our ordinary states, don't have. But they do. They have these keys to the kingdom of consciousness. And from that moment forward, I was totally convinced, profoundly convinced, of the one mind concept, because it had become real for me, quite real. So that's the first story. Selna wants to know if anyone lost a camera in the mini mela. No, Selna. doesn't belong to anyone here. Is it? Oh, very good. You win the prize, SK. Good. Good. So a theme that we're working on in the inner search studies with Bodhinatha and myself and the other swamis is the Guru Parampara and harmony. And I'm going to add one this afternoon we haven't really talked about, and it's called responsiveness. On the Guru Parampara side, I'm going to say what all of you know, but it's important to continue saying this, that we're all so blessed to have come onto this path. This is a rare and deep and wholesome and mystical path. It's a path of not just having a guru on the wall with a picture and a garland around him and you say, Om, the guru, I love you. And no, it's a path that has a guru who can actually talk back. Yeah. Yesterday, one of the inner searchers told me that she'd been with other Hindu groups in earlier years and had always wanted the guru to come to her home, to bless her home. But that guru didn't do that, even though in her home she'd prepared a little seat, like a guru simhasanam, and everything was in readiness, but it never happened. Then she came into Gurudeva's sphere, and one day Bodhinatha walked in her door and sat in that little chair. That's the kind of guru that you want, the guru who is really in your life, who is inside of your mind and your karmas, who knows more about you than your best friend knows about you, who knows things about you that you don't even know about yourself. You want a guru who's engaged with your life, involved with your life, responsive to your life. If you write an email to Bodhinatha, you're going to get an email back. If you write an email to the Adinam, you're going to get an email back. It's guaranteed. Might be a little slow sometimes. Maybe he's in Mauritius. But but you'll get an email back. And that's what you want. You want a guru who's real and effective and involved and interested and loves you and wants you to make progress on this path and in this life, and wants to be there when you're in trouble, and wants to be there to rejoice and celebrate when things go well. Wants to be there with you and be there for you. That's what you want. You see all of the people who don't have spiritual guidance, and you know the confusions that they live with and the hurts that they live with and the unresolved conflicts that they live with and the pains and memories, and they don't have anyone to tell them how not to do that. But you do. You do. You have a guru who can teach you how not to get into those realms. So one of those realms is strain and conflict between us. Excuse me. Strain and conflict between us. I think you all know that the monks don't allow that inside the monastery. Something comes up. We sit down before we put our head on a pillow. We sit down and we talk about it. You know, you said something this morning, Siva, that hurt my feelings. And then you say, no, I didn't. So, no, I remember you said blah, 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 blah. Well, that was nothing. Well, it was nothing, but it hurt me. Well, get over it. Right? That's how people are with each other. But then you and I have a commitment to not having those relationships. So what? So then we start talking. And then you say, well, you know, maybe you're right. I did say something. Not quite what you thought I said, but close. And then I say, well, what did you mean by that? And I didn't mean anything. You know, I was distracted and just kind of half awake, and I didn't mean anything. I love you. Oh, really? Yeah, I love you a lot. Oh, I wouldn't have known it by what you said. Well, I'm sorry. And then you say the big S word, sorry. You know, I'm sorry. And they say, oh, well, I'm sorry too that I misunderstood you. I should have, if I'd known a little, because I know you, I should have realized you were just a little tired. And then we talk like that until both of us feels okay about it. And then we go to sleep. That's how the monks do it. Now, you can't all do that particular discipline necessarily. But what you can do and what you need to do and what you really should do with each other, I'm only talking about among the shishyas now. I'm not talking about you and your boss or you and your neighbor or you and the mean person at the mall. No, I'm just talking about you among each other as Gurudeva's devotees. You should not permit strains and hurts and conflicts and competitions. It's also this business of competition. This Katoomba is competitive and this one's better than that one. No, it's not. That one's better than this one. They're all better than anything in the world, you know. There's no need for us to have any of that one-upsmanship going on in our life. No need for that. And if we get rid of that, see, that takes up actually a lot of mental, emotional real estate. Yeah, you only have so much real estate, you know, a couple of acres. And if you use 1.75 of those acres for all of this business, you only get to do good stuff on a quarter of an acre of mental, emotional real estate. So we want to not do that. How do you not do that? You not do that by telling yourself that you're not going to do it and then living up to that promise. And when the next opportunity comes and someone says, okay, you do this, and you say, well, why are you telling me to do that? I should be telling you to do that. Well, and you get into those states of mind, just stop. And respond in another way. Of course I'll do that. I'm not threatened by who's in charge of this thing. I'm here to serve. I'm here for my guru. I'm here for Shiva. I'm not here to banter with you or compete with you or you with me. I'm here for a very pure purpose. So let's do it. Let's cooperate. Let's get on with the business of the spiritual life and the building of the spiritual park and the building of our own internal spiritual park too. So I want to get rid of all of that competition and all of that conflict and all of that betterness. We're all equal in Bodhinatha's mind, every single one in this room. There's nobody who's better than or less than, even one iota. You're all divine and equal. And we want to be that way with each other. There's a great story I once heard in India. Want to hear a story? She likes stories. Now here's a story. This is not a true story. First story was a true story. So there was a guru who had a big ashram. Wonderful guru, loving guru. And he had all these shishyas come to his ashram, and he was quite popular. And so he ended up with hundreds and hundreds of shishyas serving and doing seva and siva tondu in his ashram. But they didn't. They were doing what I was saying just a minute ago, we don't do. They were, you know, this one didn't like that one, so he'd say a few backbiting words, you know, to the guru. Oh, you know, I saw him yesterday, you know, and he was over where he shouldn't have been, and he doesn't really have any respect for you. And I know, I hate to say this. I really hate to say this. And tried to get him kicked out of the ashram. Now, things were going on, all of the things that you can imagine. And we don't have time to list. So the guru was very sad about this. It really kind of broke his heart. And he tried to talk to them. And they just didn't get it. To them, they were there with the guru. And the closer they were to him, no matter how far away someone else had to be pushed, that was the goal of life. And that was that. So he got very frustrated. And he started went into meditation. And he meditated on Shiva, and prayed to Shiva, and for days and days and days he had this little, I said, I have to solve this, my ashram needs to have your love in here, Shiva, you know, and this is not your love, this is something else. So at the end of his 3 days of meditation, Shiva appeared to him. And Shiva said, observing what you are worried about, and I'll help you on one condition. He said, what's the condition? I'll help you on the condition that that I come to the ashram and I'll be anonymous. You won't know who I am. So Shiva will come to the ashram, but you won't know who I am. Even you won't know who I am. He said, if you accept that condition, then I'll come. He said, of course, you know, please come to the ashram. So the guru was so happy. He left his little quarters, his kutir, and he went out to his shishyas, and he said, I just had a wonderful conversation with Shiva. And he's promised to come to the ashram. But he made one condition that even I, and certainly not you, are going to know who he is. So that was the announcement. So the next day, everyone was being very careful. Maybe you're Shiva. I better be nice to you. Well, no, maybe he's Shiva. I think I'll be nice to him too. So they started being nice because they were afraid to not be nice to Shiva. This is the school of thought of be afraid of God. So after a few weeks of practicing this, the Shiva came to the guru and he said, okay, I did my work. And then the guru said, well which one were you? After, you can tell me now, right? He said, no, I can't tell you. But now everything is the way you wanted it. Because why? Because everyone in the ashram is looking at everyone else as Shiva. and just don't tell them that I left. And so that's a wonderful story. And if we can all do that, which Gurudeva would be very thrilled if we really did that, then all of this business I was talking about earlier goes away. Because we'll look at each other as a divine, divine being. So that's what we want to do. In my life, I have a little touchstone. Anyone know what a touchstone is? What's a touchstone? Yes, exactly. So in the old days, when they were trying to find out how pure gold was, they had something called a touchstone, and they would rub the gold, and depending on the purity, certain colors would be scraped off, and it would show how pure it was. So I have a spiritual touchstone that shows how evolved a person is. So it's really cool. I'm going to give you a spiritual touchstone, and you can always know how spiritually evolved someone is. We should make this into an app. Yeah, a little iPhone app. That would be the perfect thing. So this touchstone is gratitude. A really simple thing. When someone comes to Kwai Adinam, and I talk to them, and they talk to me, and if I find out in those conversations that they have no gratitude, then I know they have no spiritual evolution to speak of. If I find that they're full and overfull of thankfulness, then I know, aha, this person's come a long way on the path to the self. Because gratitude is you get gratitude when you're full. You get gratitude when you're elevated. Some people think that the best prayer that's ever spoken is just a simple thank you, Shiva. Thank you, Shiva. Every morning when I wake up, here's the first things that come out of my mouth every morning. Anbe Shivamayam Satyame Parashivam. That's the first thing. And then I go to my little altar and I put some vibhuti on Shiva's lingam. And I say, thank you, Shiva. And then I put some vibhuti on Gurudeva's holy feet, little sandals. And I say, thank you, Gurudeva. And then if I die right then, I'm good. Gratitude, it is such a powerful and underrated gift of force and consciousness, gratitude. And you should all keep developing more and more gratitude for things. And I'm going to help you do that. Where are the ribbons? So long ago, I think it's 20 years ago now or so, a person started a movement. The movement's called Who You Are Makes a Difference. And started a little movement. It was just not meant to be a big thing. But he started it, and the training was to tell people to appreciate people in your life of verbally to express appreciation to people in your life and tell them that they're important to you and you're glad to have them in your life. And then she'd ask that person to tell the next person and then that person to tell the next person. So it seems that in that process, one person told a man at work, you know, I appreciate your presence in my life. And that man went home and told that to his 14-year-old son. And in telling it to the 14-year-old son, they said, son, I want you to know, I don't tell you this very often because you're my son, but you're really important to me and I love you. And I'm happy to have you in my life. And the boy started crying like a baby. And he said, you know, Dad, I was just going to commit suicide. That was my plan. Because I was so sad and sorrowful and depressed in my life. But this makes me want to rethink that. And he kind of saved that little boy's life by the simple thing of saying, you know, thank you for being in my life. So we're going to practice this right now. Padmaja, come up here. You have to pay attention because in a few minutes I'm going to ask you to do this. You sit right there. A little closer. Are you scared?
No.
Better not be.
So I'm going to tell you a little bit about who you are in my life. And then I'm going to ask you to reciprocate. And we're doing this to teach everyone here how this works. You've really moved me. Kind of deeply, because of your dedication, because of your sacrifices that you made to come onto this path and to embrace the Guru's teachings, the fact that you learned Rudram on your own after you saw the monks chanting Rudram, and now you can sit there and chant Rudram without any notes, and even Runal needs his little iPad sometimes. The way you've raised your beautiful daughter, the way you arranged Bodhinanda's visits to Texas and again and again and again, and brought together all of the interfaith groups and showed them the heart of Hinduism through Bodhinanda's voice and Bodhinanda's answers to all the questions that the panelists asked. And you gave that gift to Texas. And I somehow think that you've just begun to impact my life. And I want to put this ribbon on. You're sorry. It says, who I am makes a difference. You'll be okay?
Sure. What an honor.
Matches.
Thank you. Okay.
Microphone. Oh, they want you to do microphone.
Is it on?
Yes. So I'm really not sure where do I start. But my personal journey and the journey of our family would not have been complete without you. In so many ways, you were always there. You have this loving nature, always encouraging. And in so many ways, I would think that directly and indirectly, you encouraged me to do things that I've never probably imagined that I could do. So in a way, my own personal potential, I didn't know that I had. So I think all the credit goes to you and other monks too, but especially felt very comfortable with you, and I don't know why. And I'm sure I think so many of you could relate to that somehow you have that knack of making people very comfortable in your presence. They open up and just say anything, everything to you. So that's an art that you have and you possess, which makes and helps us individually. So thank you for that. And you know that when I had my personal struggle, I think I came to you. And I'm not sure. I still sometimes look back and think about the conversation that we had. And I don't know where I had the courage to say what I said. But it was only possible because you shared that, you opened up yourself so that I could share that with you. So I think it was personally very important for me to move beyond that stage. So you have a great role in there. It would not have happened without your assistance, without your encouragement, and without your presence. I definitely appreciate my family's support in everything that you just described that I was able to do. I look back 7 years or 8 years ago, and my life was very different than what I do now, completely. And I give credit to Gurudeva's teachings. I think, though I never got to meet him on a physical plane, he's definitely a source of inspiration. And I think the way I connect with you and Bodhinatha and all the monks, I never miss that part that I never got to meet him. I think he's alive very much for me as I see you and Bodhinatha. As Guru Tattva, I think that's just flowing right there. So my personal, whatever I've had, little I have been able to achieve, was only because of all your encouragement. And I want to thank you for that.
I didn't even mention all of her work getting Gurudeva's trilogy into Gujarati and translating the publisher's desk every month and. So, now you know how it's done. Requires a little courage, a little bit of openness. So what I want is for the sadhakas, can you come? You may not know the person that you're appreciating as well as Padmaja and I. But that's okay. So what I'd like you to do, three of you, is pair everyone up. So they'll give one, and that's the pair. Right? Then one, that's a pair. And then you get together, like face each other, and appreciate. I don't have to ask how that went. Wonderful to see such enthusiastic appreciation for each other. And we can extend that to the whole world, appreciate each other. That was how Gurudeva lived, as you all know. You remember Gurudeva say, I love you, you love me. Remember that? Six little words. And we want to awaken that sense that we love everyone. There's no one that we don't love. There's no one beyond our love and affection and appreciation. So take appreciation back out in the world and then use it as a little touchstone. If somebody is moaning and groaning and thinking that they don't have enough in life, then you know right where they are. And if someone is just like, oh, I'm so happy today, I'm so grateful to Shiva, I have a guru, you know. Then you know that they're far along the beautiful Sanmarga path. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamashtu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Jai Gurudeva.